Oh, no time for a proper intro. I'm Harper Pestinger. This is the Golden Generation massive panel. First up, Pat Brichetto, regular. How you going, Pat?
Absolutely excellent, mate.
That's good to hear. And Tom Williams in the middle of the night in Qatar. How are you?
Very well, thank you, Harper. Best day of my life just happened today. So fantastic to be on the pod once again.
Oh, so good. And it's so good to have Daniel Garb also here from Qatar. Garby, are you going excellently like everyone else?
I am, yeah. I mean, I'm lucky enough to witness my second Socceroos World Cup victory live today. I was there in Nelspruit in 2010 in South Africa. But that didn't really feel like a win because, we beat the Serbians. We failed to make it through the group stages on that night. But it shows how our expectations change. We were pretty downcast about that, but you know, obviously delighted with the win today. So I know I sound a little bit subdued. That's just because I'm absolutely knackered. It's been a long ass day, but one of the more memorable ones in Australian football, that's for sure. So it's been unbelievable.
Oh, well, thank you very much for making the time for us, mate. Really appreciate it. And we haven't got you on for too long, so we'll ask you first, just talk us through your experience of it, because everyone has their own, and I'll just let you tell the full story of the day.
Yeah, I mean, look, it started early. We had a function with the Green and Gold Army. I'm one of the MCs for the Green and Gold Army, so we were out at the equestrian club early. It was hot today. I don't know if you noticed that, Tom. It was an absolute stinker.
Boiling. So, absolutely boiling.
We actually cut our function short because we just couldn't take the heat. We wanted to get inside the ground. It was so different to the France game because we had a big party before the France game, but the 10 p.m. kickoff, by the time we walked into the ground, we were knackered. I just felt there was so much energy when we walked inside the ground today. The place was buzzing. The Tunisians had a big impact in that sense. I mean, there were so many of them. And the Aussies went along with it. They probably lifted our game in the stands, if you like, and I don't know. I was excited before the France game, but walking in the venue, I was like, yeah, this is not going to go well. But today, I don't know. There was a feeling. I walked inside and I went, something's going to happen for us today. I just had that feeling as we walked inside the venue, and it did. A fantastic first half. I thought we played brilliant football, and then we were resilient in the second and just held on amongst a wave of Tunisian attacks, which was expected, of course, considering the situation they're in, and there were some heroic performances to see us through. Harry Souter was just otherworldly. That is just one of the more incredible Socceroos performances of all time, and if there's been a better defensive performance at this World Cup, well, I haven't seen it. He was remarkable. Aaron Moy scintillating in the middle of the park, not only with his composure on the ball, but just the interventions. How many times did he get a foot in to break up an attack? And that's not always Aaron Moy's game. We know that he sets the tempo on the ball, but the amount of times he just got a toe in to break up the Tunisians was incredible. Matt Ryan, that was his seventh World Cup game and definitely his best. A first clean sheet for the Socceroos at the World Cup since Chile 1974. So I thought he was fantastic, the skipper. And then there were plenty others like Mitch Duke in the first half and Craig Goodwin who went along with him. But, some heroic displays to go with a tale of two halves in terms of the Socceroos' performance for a massive 1-0 win.
So good. Tom, maybe we'll get into your version of events from today. But also, I'm interested to know, Harry Souter, the Aussie Van Dyke, that song got a massive run at Fed Square. Did it get a run in Doha?
No, but we did manage to get we managed to appropriate the Harry Maguire. He drinks the vodka, he drinks the Jaeger, his head's massive chant. that was very fun. Nailed out Souter got a lot of runs actually. but that was absolutely one of the best days of my entire life, to be honest. It was an incredible experience. It's sort of hard to describe what it's like when, and I know Garby's spoken about this before in terms of going to the other side of the planet with thousands of other Australians and not even just experiencing the game, but winning the game and playing an active role in like willing your side to victory there. Cause it felt like all the Australians in the crowd there were or made a difference. Because as I said off air, I think that that Tunisian crowd was probably the best atmosphere I've ever experienced at a football game. Like every time we got the ball, it was just constant squealing. You could barely hear the person next to you. It was like all of the fans around the stadium, not even just the ones behind the goal, were all like screaming out this like one song, like the whole game. I don't know what on earth they were saying. But it was ridiculous. And like for the players to step up and have the mentality to combat that, I think is so unbelievable. And as I've mentioned as well, like there's been a lot of criticism about the Aussie DNA and stuff like that. But if that's the Aussie DNA there, then I'm so, so proud to have a bit of that, because that was just an unbelievable effort from all the boys. It was superb.
Well, Graham Arnold's been trying to foster, well, in the media at least, and probably with his players in private, you would have thought, this backs against the wall, us against the world mentality. And it just paid off so, so well, because this is the ultimate us against the world, when 95% of the fans in the stadium are going for the other team and screaming their heads off, as you said, Tom. But Garby, we'll get into the on-field stuff maybe once you've headed off, because, as I said, we haven't got you here for too long. But you were talking to us off-air about a post-game function you have had with the players and their families, which must have been an incredible way to cap off an incredible day.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as if it was wild or anything like that, like they were dancing around, chanting like the fans were in the bars in Qatar tonight, no doubt. But probably emotional is a better way to describe it. You know, the link between player and their families and the journey they've gone on together and the sacrifices, it's quite amazing. And yeah, I think it's a special one, and you don't realize the sacrifices that parents and families make for the players. And we're around the families at the moment. The Green and Gold Army are looking after the families and taking them to games and taking them on tours. You get to know them a lot. And they are all very emotional, and they're very nervous before games, and they're very tense watching their loved ones perform out there. And to get that reward today of a win meant a lot to all of them, not just the players, but you know, the families as well. And you could see that after the game, the reflection they all had together. And they don't get to see their families a lot, and the players really yearn for that. But they are kept away at the training base, and they see them two or three times, you know, throughout the World Cup. Before games, it's so important to warm up next to them, wave a glimpse of them. It's a really unique situation. So tonight was a special moment for them to celebrate the victory and, yeah, as I said, do some reflection. And they were delighted, the players, as you can imagine. I mean, I spoke to a lot of them, and even the ones that didn't play, they were just like, how good was that? Like, what an incredible moment for all of us. But they're focused. They've got a big game coming up against Denmark, and they know that they've got a chance to get through the group. And they don't want to just say, we came here and got a win and then faded out and, you know, went back home. They want to make it through to the next stage. They want to create more and more history. It's a great opportunity for them. They've got the double chance now against Denmark. At the function, the France-Denmark game was on, and there was a healthy round of applause when France closed that out 2-1, because they know that it makes a big difference to their chances now. I think Australia still goes in as underdogs. The Danes will be the favourites to win that game, but the double chance helps. So, yeah, it was a ripping night and a great way to end. And, yeah, they're in very good spirits, as you can imagine.
Well, I said just before, just a little correction quickly on my Qatar geography. The game was in Doha, of course. It was in Al Wakra. And as will the Denmark game be at 2 a.m. Melbourne, Sydney time. I think that's 6 p.m. local time. But Garby, just before we let you go, is there anything else you want to add on your experience of the day, or how you feel about the future or anything like that before you get to bed?
Just a wonderful day. I mean, the celebrations when we scored both here and back in Australia are just wonderful. And then, you know, the celebrations after the game, the way in which everyone in the stands just hugs each other and starts going ballistic, it's simply fantastic. And then you walk through the stands of the stadium as you make your way out, and it's just screams of come on Aussie, and you're just hugging strangers. It's fantastic. And I'm sure people are doing that in Federation Square, and those scenes there are incredible. The players have seen them. They can't believe them. You know, anyone who says Australia is not a football nation needs their head read. We are. We're a massive football nation. We just happen to be fragmented as a football nation across many different aspects. But we're lucky that when our national teams play, the Socceroos and the Matildas, we all come together. And there's no better example than what transpired, in Australia, in Melbourne at Fed Square, and I'm sure plenty other live sites around the country tonight and certainly at the ground. So a great performance. Individually, you know, Harry Suter's just taken himself to a whole new level, and that's going to be exciting to watch moving forward. I think he'll land up in the Premier League pretty soon. I wonder what changes will be made for Denmark. Probably not many, but I do remember 4 years ago, by the time we hit that third game against Peru, we looked shot. So there could still be a couple more. I think Milos Deganek might come in at right back. Fran Karacic, I thought, was solid. But Milos Deganek looks like he might be the best fit there. So that change I would expect to happen. Does he make another one in midfield? Does Keanu Backus potentially start for Riley McGree just to ensure we're not fatigued in central midfield? Maybe, as good as McGree was, I thought, for an hour as well. The rest of the team should probably stay the same. But it wouldn't surprise if there are a couple of changes. Just make sure we're fresh and that we're not too fatigued. But the reports I'm hearing from the conditioning staff is that they're in a really good spot, and 4 days rest means they can go with the same 11 again. So maybe just the one change at right back potentially.
Well, Gab, we better leave it at that because you're a very tired man and you've got to get some sleep. Go Socceroos. Hope the Denmark game is amazing. Hope your next few days are amazing experiencing the Qatar World Cup. And thank you very much for taking the time out from us. We really, really appreciate it.
No worries. Sorry if I sound a bit quiet. Simon Hill's sleeping in the other room. I don't want to wake him up. So I've been speaking softly. Good on you all. What a moment. It was a privilege to be there. And bring on Denmark in 4 days' time. And then hopefully a round of 16 clash.
Cheers, Garby. Bring on Denmark.
Thanks, Garby.
Cheers, Garby. See you, mate. And Pat, let's get you back into it because you have not spoken yet. Garby spoke about the potential lineup for the Denmark game. How do you feel about the lineup for the Tunisia game? No changes other than the injury-enforced one with Fran Karacic coming in for Natty Atkinson.
Yeah, look, I was a little bit surprised that Hrustic didn't start, but that could have still been a bit of a fitness issue. Obviously, he didn't get on the pitch against France, so maybe Arnold just wasn't really wanting to play him for the full 90 minutes. But I think I didn't really want to see too much change, especially I know a lot of people after the France game were not too happy with Aaron Moy, but I think this Tunisia game was one where he would have been a lot more suited. It was suited to his game. We were going to have more of the ball, going to play a bit more positively, and I think Garby touched on it before. He had an excellent game. The decision to keep him was vindicated. I think one thing I was a little bit, not so much confused by, but I think the substitutions didn't really work to probably the desired effect. I mean, Hrustic did come on in this game, and I thought he actually wasn't too good. There were times where he gave the ball away in dangerous positions, tried to overplay in the last 10 minutes when we were trying to see how to win in probably a way that wasn't too effective and put us under a bit more pressure. And Awa Mabil, I thought he was unfortunately just, he looked really out of it. Like, my brother made a comment to me about a minute after he came on. My brother said, has Mabil picked up an injury? Just because he looks so, for someone who has just come off the bench and someone who's also, full of running very fast, he looks so leggy, like he'd been running out there for the full 90 minutes. And obviously there was that situation right at the end of the game where he probably should have squared it to McLaren, who was open with a one-on-one chance, and he just made the wrong decision. So I thought a couple of the substitutions, whilst they were probably the right ones on paper, so it's not necessarily Arnold's fault, I don't think they performed to a level that eased the pressure. If anything, they probably increased the pressure at the same time. Obviously, naturally, the Socceroos are dropping back as the game goes on and on and on. But look, I think a lot of the starting players, they performed either brilliantly, a few performed brilliantly, but they all had, solid 7 out of 10 games. And that's just exactly what we needed in a game like that. And then, Suter was just absolutely brilliant. It's amazing that we, in a way, that we qualified without him, that we didn't have him for those Peru's game. But you just see now we've got him on the biggest stage, and it's just thank you, Scotland, for not choosing to cap this wonderful 6'7" giant man who plays for Stoke. I think 25 million people are very grateful for that.
Tom, what was the mood like within the throng and the masses in Al Wakra? Was it well, obviously there's a whole mix of nervousness and excitement, but was there confidence coming into it and at the start of the game before we scored?
Funny enough, I actually reckon there was more confidence before the France game. I think there was it's a bit weird how that worked, but I think a lot of the France game sort of sapped the energy and confidence away from a lot of people. So personally, I went into this game a bit nervous just because I knew that was a lot to play for, whereas the France game, I felt it was a bit of a free hit against the world champions, see what we can do, whereas against Tunisia, like, you lose, you're out. And our draw wouldn't have really done a lot for us because then we'd have to go and beat Denmark. So I went in pretty nervous, but I think those nerves were sort of quashed by everyone in the crowd as soon as we score that opening goal, and then it just becomes jubilation and then a sort of us v them mentality against that absolutely raucous Tunisian crowd, which created just the most cacophonous atmosphere that you could imagine in Al Wakra. at the Al Janoub Stadium. Fantastic venue that has a very unique facade, it must be said. Fantastic on all accounts there. And I totally agree about Soutar. He's just an absolute behemoth at the back. It's like a lot of Tunisia's opportunities came from trying to cross out wide and like overload our fullbacks. But like every single time that a cross or any potential delivery came in, Soutar just got his big head on like anything. And that tackle that he put in on, I think, Jabali, when Rolls basically like slipped over himself, that was just absolutely mental. Like, I thought he was literally going to like break his absolute legs when he just like comes sliding in there. So unbelievable stuff, really.
Pat, when Rolls, I think he kicked the ball into his face, he slipped on his ass, got back up briefly and then slipped over his ass again. Mate, my heart just sank when that happened. I thought that was goal bound for sure. And I think as did the 10,000 other people in Fed Square. But was the mood similar in your lounge room with you and your brother?
Well, look, I think my exact reaction was, oh, for fuck's sake. I think that kind of... So I think everyone in the stadium in Australia was probably thinking the exact same thing or were using curse words of a similar nature. But just, yeah, the way that Soutar just recovered there, and it was just the perfect slide tackle. Look, my brother, you know, he's an NPL level centre back, so he appreciates the art of defending, and he was just full of praise for Soutar for that just perfect tackle. Because if he mistimes that, there's a good chance he gets sent off, because I believe I'm pretty sure he was the last man. I'm not sure if there was anyone in line with him, but if he misses the tackle, he's through in on goal, or if he takes out the man without the ball, then he could be sent off, and then that's just who bloody knows what would have happened then. But it was just absolutely brilliant. And there was even a moment in the first half where Soutar actually did, you know, he did make a mistake, he got beaten with a quick long throw, but he still recovered to put in that massive block from the shot. You know, he made up 20-30 meters or whatever and put a sliding block to deny a shot that would have gone on target and would have tested Ryan. So that was just brilliant. I'm not really sure when the last time we had a centre back at that level, and who could not only at that level, but Soutar still so young. He's had a year out of the game, which has been so unfortunate. It probably may potentially cost him a Premier League move earlier, but surely now Premier League clubs are going to be knocking on the door. And it's just so exciting to see. Look, I don't think since Lucas Neal we've had a centre back that has the potential to be in the Premier League for years and years to come. It's just, it's so exciting. Look, I'm not sure where in Scotland he's from. But, I mean, I'm just so grateful that he's now as green and golden as Aussie as the rest of us.
I can tell you, mate, he's from Aberdeen.
Aberdeen.
the Socceroos factory, they call it. But maybe we should get on to this Denmark game that we can look ahead to. As I said before, it's happening Wednesday night, Thursday morning, 2 a.m. Melbourne, Sydney time, 6 p.m. local time in Al Wakra at Al Janoub Stadium, the stadium of the south, that means in Arabic. I actually speak fluent Arabic for the listeners, just a bit of a fun fact for you there. But of course, France beat Denmark 2-1 early this morning, which could not have been any better for us, because that means if we don't lose to Denmark, we're into the round of 16. Tom, how are you feeling about that?
Oh, I don't even want to begin to imagine what it would be like if we made the round of 16. Like, if this is what it's like for winning a game against Tunisia, then imagine a game like drawing against Denmark to get through, or like winning against Denmark to get through to the round of 16, or even better, like coming up against Argentina in the round of 16 and beating them. Like, there's this funny thing.
Let's relax a bit. Let's just take it a game at a time.
Can I just say, if we make it to the round of 16, there is nothing that will excite me more than when Messi goes up to take that first corner and then the whole Australian section is just hitting him with the fattest
hoo-ah
in, like, the universe. There's also this, like, there's this hilarious thing that all, like, the other South American countries do, or, like, the Central American countries, like, specifically the Mexico fans, like, they all sing this, like, massive chant, and it just ends with, like, Messi, chao, Messi, chao, Messi, chao, chao, chao. So that would also be hilarious.
Well, at the moment, Poland's in pole position to get out of the group. They're top. But they're not necessarily favourites because they play Argentina next. But if Poland don't lose to Argentina, then Poland will finish top. Well, barring Saudi Arabia beating Mexico. And that means we'll play them if we finish second. I don't want to jinx it or anything or put the moz on it. So I'll move on. And Pat, I'll throw to you. How do you feel about the Denmark game, sir?
Look, I do think we need to be better. I know, look, Tom was at the Denmark game, so I guess he will touch on that. The Denmark-France game, sorry, I should say. So I'm assuming he will touch on that a little bit later. But it seems that Denmark haven't hit the heights that some expected. I rather boldly, with my take that was hotter than Qatar, I predicted that they would make the semi-finals. And at the moment, that is looking quite perilous. I also predicted that France would get knocked out in the group stages, and we're just going to politely ignore that. But look, that's it.
Well,
you can't.
The conspicuously absent Lucas Ronaldo had Denmark into the final, I should mention.
we'll ignore that just for his sake. We'll ignore that too. But look, obviously, we know how good Denmark are. They've got an absolutely excellent side. They've been together for quite a few years now. They obviously had that amazing run to the Euros, where they actually didn't have a great start to the Euros as well. So we cannot count them out at all just for a draw and a loss. We can't just assume that we're going to be able just to hold on to a draw. They're an absolutely excellent side. Yeah, they've got Christian Eriksen still pulling the strings in the midfield. They have a very solid defence. I think Kasper Dolberg, I think he hit the post at one stage in the France-Denmark game. So they're a high-quality side. Look, I know we got a point against them back in 2018. I don't really want that to create false promise and expectations, because that was such a long time ago. Our team is completely different. But as much as we are lauding some of the individual performances from our own game today, I think we do need to be better. Look, I think the second half was incredibly scrappy, and I think there were just times where Australia were panicking a little bit on the ball. We were just rushing a bit, even when, because look, Tunisia weren't really pressing too much, but there's just times where we got the ball and we just did the first thing that came to our heads a little bit, whether it was just a bit of a rushed pass, a bit of a rush clearance, or trying to do a bit of a tricky flick or touch on of the ball when we didn't need to, especially in the last 10, 15 minutes, where you just think you just need a bit of calmness and composure on the ball. So I think we actually put ourselves under a lot more pressure than we needed to. And then, look, obviously, as the game went on, we did drop back, which is, you know, that's normal and expected. And that's when Tunisia actually started to have more possession. They started to pepper our goal a little bit more. And look, I thought Tunisia were really poor. I was really, I won't say I was disappointed, because I'm glad they were shit, but I wasn't expecting them to be that bad, because I thought they were quite good against Denmark from what I saw against them. I thought they were pretty below par. But I think the thing is, there was just a lot of nervousness at times in the box. There were times where we're not putting great headers on. We're kind of just, it's a bit helter-skelter stuff at times. There's nothing wrong with that necessarily, but in a game where it's going to be interesting to see how we approach this, because it's the situation, like, do you go on the front foot, obviously go for the win, or do you do the natural human instinct, which is just to sit back and hold on to the draw? And I say this because back in the Olympics, back in the Tokyo Olympics with the Olive Roos, we had a similar situation when we only needed a draw against Egypt, and Graham Arnold was the coach, and there's actually quite a few players in that squad, in the Olyroos squad, that are in the Socceroos squad now as well. So it's going to be very interesting to see what lessons they learn from that game, because in that Egypt game, we kind of tried a bit of a sit-back thing. He did a whole tactical change, and it didn't work. We were terrible, and we lost 2-0 and went out at the Olympics. So it's interesting, will that play on Graham Arnold's mind? Has he learnt from that? Will he now approach things a bit differently? And I think Denmark are obviously a much better team than that Egypt team. So it's going to be very interesting to see how he sets up. Obviously, we hope that those individuals that did so well do so again. But we need to be a bit more settled when we're under pressure, say, in the second half, and it's still a draw in the game. And we do need our substitutes to have a bit more of an impact than they did last night.
That maybe the listeners would appreciate that kind of analysis, but personally, for me, the reasoned, well thought out takes, bit of a mood kill, to be honest.
Oh, and I'm sorry. I'm very sorry.
No, but mate, thank you very much. But I don't know how the Egypt under 23 team would be feeling about you saying they're not as good as Denmark, but we'll move on. Tom, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, well, I think. With the Denmark game, it's going to be a very, very difficult game, obviously, but I actually think in some respects it could be not easier, but it's a different type of test to the one that we had today. So there won't be 40,000 raucous Danish people in the ground that make the game so much harder for us. And they won't be as physical as Tunisia were. They'll be a better footballing side. They'll be really good on the ball, but they're a completely different sort of challenge. So what I saw against France, I was obviously at Stadium 974 for that just a few hours ago, and France wiped the floor with them, like in pretty much every way. Like France could have easily scored like 4 or 5 goals. People were getting on Nathaniel Atkinson's back for not being able to defend Kylian Mbappe. Well, guess what? Rasmus Christensen and Joachim Andersen both play for Premier League teams and were on toast the entire game from Mbappe, who scored 2 goals as well. So there's clearly ways that you can get at this Denmark team. Obviously, we don't have Mbappe, but they looked they looked somewhat shaky, I must say. Even though they play with sort of 5 at the back, becomes 3 with the ball, obviously. But yeah, I don't think they looked absolutely fantastic. The thing that they looked really dangerous at was that they transitioned really quickly, and we're not the greatest at defending. And they're not the greatest at defending transitions. It'll be mainly about sort of how we approach that game. I'm actually really interested to see, like Pat said, whether we sort of shut up shop and look to just defend, or whether we do what we did today, where we apply the pressure early, set the tone, try and take the crowd out of it, and really go from there. And I think that approach, particularly by using our physicality, could be the best approach for Denmark.
Well, in my expert opinion, if I was Graham Arnold, I'd be putting 11 men in the box, because if you don't attack, you can't get hit on transition. That's my philosophy with it. No, I would like to see a bit of attacking impetus personally, fingers crossed. But Pat, France 2, Denmark 1. I know you didn't watch the full game of this, nor did I. I only woke up 15 minutes before we started recording.
That's professional, very professional, Harper.
Oh, very professional. I wanted to wake up an hour and a half early, but I just slipped through my alarm. I had that big a night, alcoholless night, sober night, but a long one. France 2, Denmark 1, Pat. How did you break down the extended highlights, I think?
I just got the 10-minute highlight, so it was just a few shots and then the 2 goals. But it's interesting with France. I think very much, look, Tom touched on their attacking prowess, and they are absolutely just they're just phenomenal in every way going forward. They've probably got one of, if not the best attack in the whole World Cup. But we're chatting about this a little bit before we started. I still think France's defense is something that can be really gotten at. Like, you look at the goal they conceded, it was a pretty poor one. I mean, I think it was Christensen. I mean, Rabiot let Christensen go by far too easily. And obviously, we saw it when we versed in the first 25 minutes, we were having chances to break through them. So I think when you're looking at France's potential, you know, going back to back, there are question marks over maybe their midfield and their defense. But yeah, in terms of just attacking, it's just absolutely phenomenal. Like, how you've got Mbappe, Dembele either side, you've got Griezmann, you've got Giroud, who is, you know, a lot of people don't think of him as a superstar, but he's the equal highest French goal scorer, I believe. So that's a pretty bloody remarkable achievement. It's just so hard for any defense to match up with that. And it looks like, you know, there were a lot of injuries. A lot of people were worried about how this France side would cope with the injuries. And in an attacking sense, they're doing just fine. It looks like they haven't missed a beat, even with Karim Benzema out. The midfield, look, it's maybe a little bit not as imperious as it was maybe in 2018 when they had Paul Pogba and N'Golo Kanté. But look, it's functioning well enough. So I'm very interested to see how France go against stronger opposition, because I think, as Tom mentioned, Tom will have a better idea as he watched the whole game in the stadium, so he can see the patterns of play a lot better. He can probably comment more on the state of Denmark. But I'm curious to see how France go. They've obviously broken that champions curse that afflicted Italy, Germany and Spain in the past. So maybe that's that monkey off the back. Can they go all the way? Not too sure. Like I said, I still have doubts over their defensive solidity against maybe stronger attacking sides. But look, you'd be happy. It's been fairly uneventful and not dramatic for the French, which isn't the same for some of their campaigns after winning World Cups or making World Cup finals.
Well, Tom could talk about the state of Denmark on field in just a sec, but I can tell you, if we beat him, or if we knock him out, don't lose to him, the people of Denmark will be in a humiliated state, and when I move there in 2 months or so, I will be acting like the cockiest, most arrogant Aussie you've ever seen.
They won't let you in. They'll just say, Australian, no, sorry, mate, you're out.
Knocked back at the border last minute. Jeez. Tom, is there anything you'd like to say about the on-field state of Denmark or the on-field state of France, for that matter?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just before that, though, I would like to say that I would like to go and I made a pretty good effort to go and find that Tunisian fella before the game that told me that they were going to fucking slap us and that we don't have a football culture in Australia, because old mate has absolutely no idea. I hope he got a massive serve of his own medicine.
I hope he's listening.
I was literally telling him about our best players. I hope he's listening as well. I was telling him about our best players, and he's like, who is that? When I told him who Aaron Moy was. So I bet he fucking knows now. So
I bet he does. I bet he's all too aware of Harry Suter.
Exactly.
Mitchell,
right.
Duke. Sir Duke.
But yeah, with France and Denmark, I think with Denmark, I'll be interested to see how they approach our game, because they play with a 3-4-2-1. They've been doing that since the Euros, but it's quite flexible in terms of the personnel that they can use. So, for example, today we saw Eriksen playing more of a sort of deeper role. And what they do is they have Højbjerg come deep to sort of assist with the three centre-backs and build up, and Eriksen basically plays in between the six and the two wide players, who actually function more as like wide players than as number 10s, as you probably sometimes see in that formation. So they try and get overloads out wide to try and cross the ball in, which was the reason that they started Andreas Cornelius today, who was he's a really big presence. So at the last World Cup, they had Cornelius and Jurgensen as the front two. Cornelius has stayed there, and the reason for that is because he's a big guy. He wins aerial duels. But the reason he got brought off quite early in the game for Dolberg was because he missed a 1v1, and because he had a decent chance to score like a tap-in but just wasn't in the right place. So I'll be interested to see if he starts, because he's the type of player that you'd expect would be able to match Australia's physicality. But I don't think he's actually a very good player. So Dolberg, I think, is a decent option there. And they've also got Yusuf Urari-Poulsen as well, who can work pretty hard up top. Yeah, they've got a really good team all around. It's a really, really solid team. We're going to need to be like at our best or even like better to have a chance of getting a draw against them. But to be honest, I think the formula was there with the Tunisia game. We were pretty good today, I thought. Without being flashy or without being overly good on the ball or whatever, we did what we had to do. And we outfought them in midfield. We outgunned them. We were winning a lot of second balls. It was really good to see. So I think if we replicate some of that against Denmark, then we should be okay. But I think it is clear quickly on France that they are one of the best teams in this tournament, I think. I think personally I'd have them it's hard to say, but I'd probably have them with Brazil and what's it called?
Spain.
Probably, yeah.
Spain?
Yeah, Brazil and Spain as the two. But I think Spain has a bit of an asterisk next to the name until they do it against a good opposition. So the Spain v Germany game will be really interesting. But from what I've seen, I think France, Brazil and Spain are probably the three best teams in this tournament.
Yeah, well, that's until we knock them out in the quarters and the semis and then the final. but, Pat, we've got six more games to sweep through review preview-wise. But just before we get on to them, is there anything else that you'd like to say about Group D, France, Denmark, Socceroos, Tunisia?
No, except that I cannot wait to make it out of the groups. And I definitely was fully confident of making out of the groups. Do not go back in any of our previous podcast episode where I said we'd be lucky to get a point. That is simply fiction and fake news. I don't want to hear about it.
Tom, anything from you on Group D?
Oh, well, do we reckon that the Brisbane Roar Kitman's getting some sort of unique payout from Charlie Austin who said that we wouldn't get a single point? What's the deal with that? I'm going to at Charlie Austin for that. Mate, you were quick to bloody blow up the bloody or crush the dreams of all the Australians on TalkSport in the UK. Time to bloody own the consequences now, mate.
Well, get on the pod, Charlie Austin. We welcome you on for some England chat, for some Socceroos chat. But one more thing I want to say on the Socceroos. I was at Fed Square. It was absolutely unbelievable, even though I felt like I was in Frankfurt, Germany. It was that much of a sausage fest. But the flares going off and the shit getting thrown in the air for the full 90 minutes, it just felt like an otherworldly experience. It felt like an uncorking of this just amazing feeling within the community of Melbourne. And the CBD after the game was just awash with yellow shirts and scarves and green and gold. And you hopped on a tram and some old lady who has clearly never watched a game of football in her life is asking you how the game went and asking you if it was an exciting game and how much we're going to win the World Cup final by. It was it was incredible. But we should move on to some other games that were played, because there were other games played, funnily enough, not that I'd know. But one of those, apparently, according to Google, was Argentina 2, Mexico 0. Tom, and there were some quite good goals, which I watched the clips of when you told me to pre-show.
Oh, yeah. It's just to preface this, I've been trying to get tickets for this Argentina-Mexico game for like the last 3 months. Literally every day of this week, I've been getting up like at around 11 a.m. and putting myself into the ticket resale thing because I've wanted tickets to this. I didn't manage to get them, and far out, it looked like such a bloody good atmosphere there. I know people that were there. At Lusail Stadium, it is the most ridiculous stadium ever. Like, it is massive, like absolutely palatial. Like, I can't even –
it's got the final.
It is – yeah, it is. So it holds around 89,000. There were 88,000 there the other day for Brazil Serbia when I went, and it was cooked. Like, and it's so close to the pitch. It feels bigger than like Wembley and Wembley holds a similar amount, just because it's not a bowl shape. It's like the outside's a bowl shape, but in the middle, like the actual ground, it's like really high up, really close to the pitch. It's mental, like mental stadium. It's like seven levels. Like we're on level 5 and there's no escalators. And we're climbing up the stairs. Mate, I was like out of breath by the time I got to my seat. I was like, what on earth is this? But massive win for Argentina. Certainly needed that after they were pretty much outplayed by Saudi Arabia a few days ago. And two unbelievable goals. Lionel Messi just doing what Messi does. Like I don't know how Hector Herrera gave Messi that much space on the edge of the box, just because you've got like the best player of all time standing there basically by himself. He only needs a meter of space and he can do some magic. And he did exactly that, completely made them pay. Ball went straight into the bottom corner. And then Enzo Fernandez, in my opinion, one of the best young midfielders on the planet, having an incredible season at Benfica, will 100% undoubtedly get a big money move to a big club really soon. Scored an absolutely unbelievable goal, did a couple step overs, curled it into the top right. It was really, really good. But I don't think Argentina were at their best, but I think we saw in the second half especially that they are a better team than they showed against Saudi, and they still cannot be counted out of this tournament.
Pat, I believe this is the sixth consecutive international game that Lionel Messi scored a goal, which proves that he's quite a good player, I reckon. And we also had Poland beat Saudi Arabia 2-0, a massive upset against the World Cup favourites there. So we now have Poland in pole position on 4 points at the top of the table in Group C, Argentina and Saudi Arabia on 3 points, but Saudi Arabia's goal difference isn't quite as good. And then Mexico at the bottom on 1 point. So how do you see this group looking after match day 3? It's very important for the Socceroos how this group looks if we get a result against Denmark.
Yeah, I think it's really intriguing. I think that Poland win over Saudi Arabia it's actually made things really interesting. I think that it's going to be one that football fans around the world are going to watch, because it could be the one group that goes down to the wire. There's so much to play for. Look, I think Poland, I think it's their first World Cup win since 2006. That might need fact-checking. But what I know is true is Lewandowski finally got his World Cup goal. He was denied in the first game against Mexico. It was a pretty poor penalty, but he wasn't going to be denied. He dispossessed the Saudi Arabia defender towards the end of the match, and he slid it past the keeper to secure the win. And it was a bit of an opposite, actually. Poland were denied from the spot first game, but this one, Wojciech Szczesny denied Saudi Arabia. It was a double save. He saved the penalty and pulled off an absolutely fantastic save on the follow-up. And Szczesny, he made another – I can't remember who had the shot, if I'm completely honest, because I just watched the three-minute highlights right before we came on. But I know Szczesny did make – one more crucial save. So I think it was a game where Saudi Arabia played really well. Once again, they could have had 1, 2, 3 goals. But I think Poland, something that we haven't seen, that, you know, they haven't performed in these big tournaments that they've qualified in, but they were clinical. You know, Zielinski, the wonderful Napoli midfielder, got that first goal. He lashed that volley into the roof of the net. And it's an important win for Poland. It puts them top of the group. Would you probably wouldn't have believed that before the start of the tournament. It's still be very tough for them. They've got to beat Argentina. And I think an Argentina side, so I just want to touch on them because I did get up to watch the game. So I would like to just say a few 30 seconds on that game. I thought they were poor. They weren't great in the first half. Look, I mean, Mexico weren't great, really, full stop going forward. But Argentina were really poor, really laborious in that first half. And I think I was very surprised to see Enzo Fernandez come off the bench. I mean, I don't think he will be coming off the bench anymore. I think he's going to slot straight into that starting side after that performance. But look, the second half, I think something clicked. Maybe there were a few little tactical tweaks and, you know, there's that substitution. But I think down that right side with Di Maria, they started to really click, and Messi's messy. I mean, it reminds me a lot of 2014 where Argentina struggled at first. They, you know, I think they needed that Messi win against Argentina. I think against Iran back in 2014, they needed that late winner to get them a crucial win. So I think with Argentina, if they can peak at the right time, I think that almost might be better than starting off really fast, but then having one of your crap games, say, in like the quarterfinal. So definitely don't count them out. They do need to probably put a 90-minute performance. That would be the one concern. But so it'd be interesting to see if Poland can pull off another upset. And then obviously, look, Saudi Arabia against Mexico. Mexico are pretty much done. We can probably all agree on that. They've been really disappointing. Look, they're not terrible defensively. They copped two amazing goals. Like, you know, I mean, poor Ochoa is just probably looking and thinking, oh, for fuck's sake, what do I have to do? But just going forward, they just offer really nothing. It's all on Lozano to do something, and he just gets the shit kicked out of him. It's rough, and it's a bit of a shame not to see Mexico potentially go further in the tournament, because their fans are absolutely amazing. They create a great atmosphere, and I think the tournament loses something when Mexico – if Mexico aren't in the knockout stage, I'd say, I think the tournament does lose something a little bit.
Yeah, well, if they – on the off chance they get to the round of 16 and get knocked out then, I think that's the eighth consecutive time that they've failed to move out from the round of 16 but got into the round of 16 in the first place. And just quickly on Poland, you said it was their first goal since 2006, I think, Pat? Actually the
first
scored
win, against, first win since 2006.
Oh, first win, sorry, first win. Yeah, but they beat Japan in 2018 in Volgograd thanks to a goal from Southampton legend Jan Benderek.
I apologise to Poland fans. I apologise.
Ian.
Yeah, sorry, Ian.
Tom, yeah, had your hand up there. You wanted to say something. But just before you do something, I'm going to edit this out. I need some fucking more tissues because my mouth is running like Harry Soutard getting back into defence. So, yeah, mouth, nose, my fucking mouth. Jesus, I've got rabies. The elevated music. I'm back. I've blown my nose. Tom, what were you going to say?
I sort of just wanted to touch on how good it is that these AFC countries are doing well at this World Cup. I've been pretty vocal about it in the past, how good I think some of these teams are. But seeing the likes of Saudi Arabia play good football, and like they dominated Poland today. They had more of the ball, way more shots. Unfortunately, missed the pen. Probably the XG gods coming back to bite them after they got lucky in that respect against Argentina as good as they played. But Poland are a team with like Zielinski, who's been one of the best midfielders in Europe this season for Napoli, Lewandowski, who's been one of the best strikers in the world for years. Matty Cash is a pretty good right back at Premier League level. They got other good solid top five leagues players like Kamil Glick, Szczesny in goal. And yet Saudi Arabia, who literally got the most absolute disrespect from so many European pundits, like Roy Keane was going and saying that like their fans are like good enough to like go and play in their team. Like, shut up, mate. Like, literally go and just watch actual football outside of Europe. Like, some of these players in this team would be very, very good players in top five leagues. Especially like Al-Dosari, Mohamed Kano, Al-Faraj, these types of guys. Well, so
it's an obvious statement, but you don't beat Argentina with shit players.
Yeah, exactly. And you don't get 23 points in Asian qualifying in a group with Japan and Australia and only lose one game if you've got shit players. Yeah. Like, so it's literally just about like people's perceptions. And particularly coming from a Western perspective where they just don't see like Arab countries as having a football culture. And that's what I think is one of the best parts about this World Cup is we're seeing all of the Arab countries are like having a massive light shone on them as a population, them as a country, and them as a football culture, because these are the countries that have brought the most fans. You look at Iran, Tunisia, Saudi Arabia, there are just absolute tons of them here. So when you think about who the World Cup's for, I think it's pretty clear that this World Cup is for those Arab countries that don't get the sort of respect that they deserve normally. So it would be brilliant to see a country like Saudi Arabia, thankfully not Tunisia. So it's probably Saudi Arabia or Iran get through to the round of 16. I'd really love to see that.
Yeah, well, we go around, we appreciate the hummus, we appreciate the falafel, but we can't bloody appreciate the football. It's disgraceful. It's flagrant. But Pat, there are four games happening overnight tonight. One particularly big one that I want to get onto first. This is the final one. It's 6 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time for us Aussies, us Melbournians and Sydney-siders. Germany versus Spain.
Yeah, it's going to be an absolute belter. I think all football fans in the world will be watching this one. You know, you've got Spain, who had their biggest World Cup win against Costa Rica in the first game. They've got such a young and exciting, so many young and exciting players. We've kind of seen the old guard from, you know, their days 10 years ago were the best team in the world, and even the likes of David De Gea, they're all gone. They've got these new exciting players. They're really starting to click. And then you've got a Germany side who were looking like they were clicking under Hansi Flick, but then they went on to lose to Japan. So they're now under massive pressure to win this game and to make sure they don't go out in the group stage for the second World Cup in a row. So I think it's just going to be absolutely fantastic. Germany are obviously going to respond very strongly. So I think it's just going to be an absolute a brilliant game. I think when Spain had a similar group game against Portugal in 2018, I think that ended up being 3-3. So if we could see something like that, that would be absolutely awesome. But yeah, I think especially if Germany losing again, going out of the group stages again, that would just be an absolutely massive story this World Cup.
Yeah. Tom, how do you rate Germany? I think I just want to say before you answer, I think in international football, because the games, there's such a long break between them, and between the big events like your World Cups and your Euros or whatever, there's such a long break between them. People tend to get stuck in the same opinions that they had 20, 30 years ago about teams. Like, this is why, well, one of the reasons why they can't appreciate the Asian Arab teams, because they weren't really doing anything 20, 30 years ago. And people still think the Netherlands are really good, even though, like, they're really not all that. But are Germany all that?
I'm actually so unsure what to think about them, because I was at the Japan v Germany game, and it was a fantastic atmosphere at that game as well. The Japanese fans created an absolute show. But for the first half, Germany were completely dominant. Like, it was honestly such a boring first half, just because Germany controlled all of the ball. They had like 81% possession. Kimmich and Gundogan just dominated the whole game. And then after halftime, something switched. Japan had an incredible tactical change in that game, sort of matched Germany's sort of five at the back thing that they were doing, because Germany play with like three at the back in possession. So Japan decided to try and match that so they could go 5v5 with Germany's attackers, because Rahm down at left back was like pushing basically as like a left winger, and Musiala was coming inside to make a front five. So when Japan made that switch, Germany just completely like buckled under all the pressure and were terrible in the second half. But I think I saw enough in the first half to say that they could be pretty decent. I think they've still got some issues with their team, though. I'd be surprised if Havertz started up top again. But the problem is that they don't really have another like out-and-out centre forward in their squad. They've got Füllkrug, who's had a pretty good season this season in Bundesliga, but Timo Werner didn't make their squad. So I think the only other option is probably Thomas Müller, who's obviously a brilliant player, but he's probably been used more as a number 10 recently. So he could go into a central striking position. Musiala can play as a 10 and Sané can play on the left. So Germany have got some very good firepower, as you can see just there from me listing off the names of their sort of attacking players. And I mentioned some of their midfielders before. But, yeah, I think it'll be a very interesting game. I'm fortunate enough to be going to it at Albeit Stadium that I visited last night for the nil-all board draw between England and USA. So hopefully this one will be a better match than that. And to be honest, I'm expecting it, because, as Pat said, Spain are brilliant, and hopefully Germany match them.
The real winner from England nil, USA nil, was Tom Williams with his viral tweet. But Japan is playing Costa Rica at 9 p.m. The very friendly time of 9 p.m. for us Melbourneians and Sydneysiders. Pat, I don't want to go around disrespecting Central American football, but I think Costa Rica are pretty shit.
Yeah, look, I think before last night's game, so it's going to look a bit silly now given that we actually won, but I think I was saying that the three worst squads overall in the tournament are probably Qatar, Costa Rica, and then Australia. And, I mean, look, Costa Rica were – I know it's a little bit – looks a bit stupid in light of our brilliant win last night. But, look, yeah, Costa Rica, I mean, outside of Kaylor Navas, all of their players either play in the local, in the Costa Rican first division, or they play in the MLS. And look, we know they went on a brilliant run back in 2014. They made the quarterfinals, they beat Uruguay, and they beat Italy. It doesn't look like we're going to be seeing that again, just because even if they win, manage to get a win and a draw, or whatever, in their next two games, that their goal difference will absolutely kill them, because it's already at -7, which is what crap teams usually have by three games, let alone one game. And look, it's a shame, because you always like to see all teams be competitive no matter what. So it's always a bit of a shame to see a team get battered around by that. But I think it's an excellent opportunity for Japan to get two wins out of two to secure their qualification to the round of 16 once again. I'm pretty sure they've made the round of 16, I think, three of the last four World Cups, I believe. And again, it's a vindication for Asian football being fantastic. It's, right up there. So it's a great opportunity for Japan to secure qualification so early, and maybe even help them secure top of the group, which I don't think is something they've ever done. But, Costa Rica could surprise us. Like I said, they've got history in doing that before, and it's the World Cup, when the beautiful thing about it is anything can happen.
Sorry, just to add to that as well, I think it'll be interesting because Japan played mostly on the break against Germany, and we saw in qualifying that Japan are probably a team that like to have the ball a lot more. So it was a bit of an interesting contrast to see how they approach a game against a big team and how they approached just the normal qualifying. So I'm interested to see whether they'll go back to what worked for them sort of against Australia, against Saudi Arabia and stuff like that, when they come up against Costa Rica, who won't be as good as Germany were.
Well, of course, I did just disrespect Costa Rican and Central American football. Maybe I should put respect on their names by making up for it.
Just hold on. Qatar finished third in the Central American cup, their version of the Asian Cup.
The Gold Cup.
The Gold Cup. So it includes North America as well. So it's like the USA and Mexico, I presume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it sort of says quite a bit about what football is like in that part of the world, yet Asian football seems to somehow get more disrespect.
Yeah, well, the Costa Rican League is called Liga FPD. They've had 116 seasons, and 96 of those seasons have been won by the same three teams. So it's just like the Scotland of Central America. But another game that we've got on tonight, we're moving on to the other group now, Belgium versus Morocco at midnight. This one is Tom. Do you want to go first on this one?
Yeah, well, Belgium-Morocco is going to be a pretty interesting game, because Morocco are one of those sort of Arab countries that have a lot of fans here. So it's going to be a tough one for Belgium, I think. And we saw the other night that Belgium were actually really bad against Canada. I was actually really surprised by how good Canada were as well. And Belgium have a lot of good players, sort of De Bruyne, Hazard, Tielemans, Vertonghen, Alderweireld, Courtois. But they were shocking on the ball. Even De Bruyne misplaced quite a few passes uncharacteristically. And I just didn't think that they looked like they were an amazing team. I think Morocco have some nice weapons. So I wouldn't be surprised if they made Belgium pay in some sort of way. It'll be a pretty tight game, I think. Look, Belgium will obviously go in as favourites, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if with the likes of Ziyech and Nesri, Saïss, these types of players, I wouldn't be surprised if Morocco managed to get something out of this game.
Yeah, I love talking about golden generations on this show, but I think Belgium's might be a bit past it. And a bit of that same kind of bias you got with Netherlands, the glory years bias. Just maybe people think they're still in it, but I don't think so, personally. Tom, I think you agree. Pat, Belgium, Morocco, how do you see it playing out before we get on to our last game?
Yeah, I think it'd be interesting because Morocco had Croatia in their first game. That was one of the many nil-all draws we're unfortunately seeing at the World Cup so far. But it's interesting the way that Croatia, obviously a brilliant side. They made the bloody World Cup final in 2018, but they really frustrated them. I'm pretty sure Croatia might have had one, maybe even no shots on target at all. So Morocco, they're a very, very difficult side to beat. Probably the one thing they didn't create much in that Croatia game. And obviously, you know, they're versing another big team again. So you'd like to see maybe a bit more end product, maybe a bit more impact on the counter. But it's interesting. Belgium made a response because they won. They were very lucky. I watched most of that first up game. And, you know, I mean, Canada bloody missed a penalty. They maybe should have had another one. And Canada were absolutely excellent. So Belgium do need to do a lot better. And like I said, you know, their golden generation, they've still got, you know, De Bruyne is amazing. They've still got quite a few good players, but that golden generation is probably already starting to pass a bit. So if they want any small, tiny chance of winning something, now has to be it. But it's a little bit worrying. I think if they have another poor performance, no matter the result against Morocco, I think a lot of people will be crossing them off the favourites list to go far in the tournament.
Well, this Golden Generation episode is passing us very quickly because we're on to our last game. Tom, it's Croatia versus Canada at 3 a.m. Melbourne, Sydney time.
Yeah, look, I certainly know who I'll be supporting for this game, and I really hope that they... I really, really hope that after a really good first performance against Belgium, that they will be, that they, being Canada, will have a very good game against Croatia. I really like the way that they performed against Belgium. Some of their players really surprised me. I was pretty happy seeing the likes of Jonathan David. There was that guy at right wing back as well, whose name escapes me, but he's signing for Celtic and he was really good. There was also Alphonso Davies, who, despite missing the pen, looked quite good whenever he had the ball. So I think Canada will be a bit of a force to be reckoned with, but it's going to be a different test against Croatia, who unfortunately are a pretty strong team. So with Modric, with Kovacic, with Brozovic, these types, but that midfield is a very strong midfield. So it'll be indicative of Canada's quality, whether they'll be able to sustain the fight with Croatia. But I'd really, really like to see them do it because, like I said, they were really good against Belgium, probably deserve to get something out of that game.
Yeah, I can't find the name of this right wing back you're talking about who looks like he's going to be signed for Bayern. Is it
for Richmond? Celtic? Oh,
why did I think you said Bayern? Yeah, Celtic. Is it Richmond Lai? Is it? That's not him, is it?
No.
Well, we'll leave that to the listeners to find out. Let us know at TGG Football on Twitter if you find out the mystery man who might be signing for Celtic.
Alistair Johnston. Alistair Johnston.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Alistair Johnston. Yeah. Sounds very Canadian, that name as well. Yeah. But Pat, have you got anything on Croatia versus Canada?
Yeah, obviously I heaped praise on Canada just before, but they need to be a lot better in front of goal. I think they had something like either 17 or 22 shots or something against Belgium. I think only three were on target, and one of those was Alphonso Davies' missed penalty. So they do need to be a lot better in front of goal. They've got Kyle Larin, who I think scored goals for fun in qualifying, so they've got goals there. But look, on the big stage, you know, on the big stage in the World Cup in front of millions of people, there's, you know, sometimes you freeze in the headlights a little bit, so I hope they score a goal because obviously it's their first World Cup in 36 years, so you want their fans to have that moment. And I think it's good for football. It's obviously a great side. They're a very entertaining side, so I'd love to see them win games like they deserve, even if it's just one win or something, you know, just for all those fans that have waited so long for it. I think they deserve that moment. I think the players deserve that moment as well because they've been working towards it for years. So I think neutrals will be getting the Maple Leafs out and singing O Canada at... or 3 a.m. if you're watching in Australia at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Well, that's the final game of the night previewed. But don't leave yet, guys, because I should say, let us know that on Spotify there's a little thing at the bottom and we're going to ask you where and how you experienced the Socceroos game last night. So let us know there. You can let us know anything you'd like to let us know on Twitter as well at TGG Football. rate us, review us. We'd really, really, really appreciate that because we're putting a lot of work into these daily episodes and I hope they're really good. Let us know if they are. Let us know if they aren't. Whatever. Get in touch. And, of course, our Buy Me A Coffee page, buymeacoffee.com/TGG football. Tom, I know it's 2:06 a.m. Qatar time, but pitch it to the listeners. Why should they donate to our Buy Me A Coffee page?
Because I need people to fund my alcohol addiction in Qatar.
Pat, why should people donate to our Buy Me A Coffee page?
Because we are poor uni students that need money to sustain our livelihoods.
Well, if that's not a pitch that makes you donate, I don't know what is. But, yeah, seriously, guys, we'd really, really appreciate that if you could help us out. It's all right if you can't. We're not going to hate you or anything, but we'd love you even more if you could. And, yeah, I hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you tomorrow. It's going to be a good one.